Following are some comments on William Shakespeare's The Tempest, Act One, from the beginning through to Prospero's conference with his spirit assistant, Ariel. If you can command these elements to silence, use your authority. The bosun sets Gonzalo right on who's in charge in a storm and why. In Act 1, Scene 1, the first thing we see in The Tempest is a literal tempest that brings to the forefront the true matter in question, authority. That is often the issue in Shakespeare's dramas, especially in the history plays and tragedies, but also even in some comedies such as Measure for Measure. As the sea rages and his ship is foundering, the bosun is not interested in paying homage to King Alonso of Naples at Gonzalo's bidding. He has more important things to do. To the imperious order, quote-unquote, "Remember whom thou hast aboard," the bosun replies only, quote-unquote, "If you can command these elements to silence and work the peace of the present, we will not hand a rope more. Use your authority." Act 1, Scene 1, lines 17 and 19 through 21. The storm, therefore, functions as a great leveler. On the ship in a moment of peril, all that matters is knowledge and capability. These qualities, and not titles or fine robes, endow a person with authority. Shakespeare is not about to ratify anarchy, but the basis of the social order on the ship, the island, and back home is about to come under scrutiny. This order has, for the time being, been thrown into productive disarray by Prospero's tempest. Gonzalo's closing words in this scene testify mainly to his humility and patience in the face of death, but they also bring home to us the terror that often filled ocean travelers before the age of modern transportation. Quote unquote, "Now would I give 1,000 furlongs of sea for an acre of barren ground. The wills above be done, but I would fain die a dry death." Act 1, Scene 1, lines 59 through 61. "What seest thou else in the dark backward and abysm of time?" Prospero informs Miranda about their past in Milan and explains the implications of the recent tempest for their future. In Act 1, Scene 2, Prospero helps Miranda, his 15-year-old daughter, to move from ignorance to knowledge about their joint past and present. Living on this island since she was 3 years old, Prospero's daughter doesn't know that her father was once Duke of Milan. Miranda feels the suffering of those who have been shipwrecked and begs Prospero to keep them safe, quote unquote, "If by your art, ellipsis, you have put the wild waters in this roar, allay them." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 1 through 2. Prospero reassures her that the shipwreck was arranged for her sake and nobody has been harmed. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 15 through 16. Prospero understands that the time has come for Miranda to learn about her former place in the social order and to prepare for her future. He begins to inform her by way of questions, the first of which elicits some remembrance of childhood attendants in Milan, and the second of which, the beautifully phrased, quote-unquote, "What seest thou else in the dark backward and abysm of time?" draws no further recollections. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 49 through 50. Prospero supplies Miranda with key information. A dozen years previously, he was Duke of Milan, only to be exiled by his brother Antonio and by Alonso, King of Naples. In Prospero's proud declaration, quote unquote, "Thy father was the Duke of Milan and a prince of power," we can already hear the stirrings of a fine revenge tragedy. The exiled Duke and current island wizard will surely demand his political authority back from the men who stole it. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 54 through 55. As Prospero admits to Miranda, he is not without blame for his own exile. The Duke devoted himself to the liberal arts, which for a busy prince might be a problem, even if by that phrase we refer only to the traditional trivium of grammar, logic, and rhetoric, and quadrivium of arithmetic, astronomy, music, and geometry. But there is some hint that Prospero went beyond these allowed subjects. Quote unquote, "Wrapped in secret studies," he confesses, he neglected the needs of his dukedom, becoming like a quote unquote stranger to those needs. Act 1, Scene 2, line 77, see lines 75 through 78 inclusive. Perhaps by secret, Prospero only means private and personal rather than public directed. But given what we will later learn about his powers, secret might plausibly be said to bear another, less traditional meaning. It makes sense to refer, along with Harold Bloom and other critics, to the career of Simon Magus, as told in Acts chapter 8, verses 9 through 24. Simon, a renowned magician in Samaria, is rebuked sternly by the Apostle Peter when he seeks to buy the apostolic power of instilling the Holy Ghost by the laying on of hands. Coveting magical powers is a risky business for mere mortals. Transgression and condemnation are always just around the corner. Prospero was stripped of civil power and exiled, largely for pursuing learning that at some point may have gone beyond the standard Renaissance liberal arts. Prospero explains to Miranda that his beloved secret studies, so-called, and consequent alienation from public responsibility led him to transfer control of daily operations to his brother Antonio. Clearly, governance was not Prospero's highest priority. Meantime, Antonio began to consider himself the rightful duke, and fell victim to a species of intoxication that led him to mistake his own and others' grandiose notions for truth. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 102 through 105. Even so, Antonio's usurpation bespeaks a certain political realism. Shakespeare consistently emphasizes that a good ruler must be shrewd, active, decisive, and when possible, magnanimous. In consequence, wherever we find a self-absorbed, irresponsible poet king like Richard II, or a mentally troubled one like Henry VI, we are sure to find him pushed out of the way by a Henry Bolingbroke or an Edward IV. So too, the brilliant but wild Mark Antony meets his match in Octavius, the future Augustus Caesar. At base, Prospero wanted to lead the life contemplative, or vita contemplativa, to the neglect of the active life, or vita activa. He sought knowledge for personal and private reasons, and grew indifferent to the charitable, practical exercise of power. Antonio's corrupt usurpation soon made Milan a tributary of the scheming King Alonso of Naples. For all his incantations here on the island, Prospero is not all-powerful beyond the island. He tells Miranda that an accident or fortune has brought his enemies within his power. Now that this seemingly providential event has occurred, he begins to operate on his own under an auspicious star, quote-unquote. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 181 through 184, inclusive. There is a tide in the affairs of men, as Brutus tells Cassius in Julius Caesar, and failing to sail with it brings only frustration and ruin. Prospero must act now or lose his chance forever. The wizard rounds off his lecture to Miranda by reassuring her that she was a great comfort during the perilous exile and has become all his care. He casts a spell to end her questioning, quote-unquote, "Thou art inclined to sleep, 'tis a good dullness, and give it way. I know thou canst not choose." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 185 through 186. "Let me remember thee what thou hast promised." Ariel reports to Prospero on the storm's effects, and to Prospero's annoyance, reminds him that he has long since been guaranteed his liberty. In Act 1, Scene 2, Prospero summons Ariel for a progress report on the tempest's human effects. Ariel dutifully provides his report, taking pride in his attention to detail. He boasts of creating fantastical atmospheric effects that drove the passengers and sailors half mad with fright. St. Elmo's fire is essential to the success of Ariel's performance. We find out, too, that King Alonso's son, Ferdinand, was the first man to jump ship, crying out, quote unquote, "Hell is empty and all the devils are here." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 214 through 215. "Ferdinand," says Ariel, "has been placed in a corner of the island, while the mariners are all asleep aboard the main ship, which waits undamaged in the harbor. The rest of the fleet's ships have sailed toward Naples. Later, we will learn that in addition to Ferdinand washing up alone, Alonso's party, as well as Stefano and Trinculo, have been isolated into separate logical groups, which will facilitate the action to come. Ariel has arranged matters perfectly with no harm done." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 217 through 237. With all storm details precisely reported, Ariel chafes to gain his freedom, saying to Prospero, quote unquote, "Let me remember thee what thou hast promised, which is not yet performed me." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 243 through 244. Prospero testily reminds Ariel that he had been imprisoned for his reluctance to serve the powerful witch Sycorax from Algiers, who then died and left him trapped and moaning in a pine tree. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 258 through 293 inclusive. "If the spirit does not obey," Prospero thunders, "he will punish him severely. Quote unquote, I will rend an oak and peg thee in his knotty entrails till thou hast howled away 12 winters." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 294 through 296. It's hard to miss the potential for tyranny in that kind of utterance. Obviously, this is not a democratic island. Ariel is much better off than Caliban, Sycorax's son and therefore the natural heir of this island kingdom, but both feel the power and strong displeasure of Prospero. Still, Prospero has made an oral contract with Ariel to free him from human control at the end of a certain time, and his liberation is near. There's just a bit more work to do, and he promises Ariel, quote unquote, "After 2 days, I will discharge thee." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 298 through 299. It's easy to see why Ariel wants his freedom. He seems to represent imagination, or the finer and more sensitive of nature's powers. But if we follow a Renaissance humanist-style reading, the play is, in part, about how humanity can and must maintain control over the forces within itself, imagination, strong emotions, etc., and beyond itself, material nature. It is mainly due to Prospero's treatment of Ariel and Caliban that, at least since early in the 20th century, critics and artists have so often given The Tempest a colonialist inflection that questions Prospero's right to treat the island's inhabitants as he does, and takes that treatment of them as an instance of the misconduct of oppressive historical interlopers. In the next audio lecture on Act 1 of The Tempest, we will meet Caliban and Ferdinand. Thanks for listening. The date of this audio recording is Saturday, May 24th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations from the plays, I have relied on the Norton Shakespeare 3rd edition, 4-volume, genre-based format.